eight, when in all reality, it's just about kind of what you want to do. I don't care if it's working at McDonald's flipping burgers, if that's what gives you happiness, but ultimately you got to seek and search out the things that do, you know,
I love
energize that, you know, emotionally and physically.
Hey, freedom fighters. Welcome to the Active Duty Passive Income Podcast, the only place where military members, veterans, and their families learn how to build wealth through real estate investing. I'm your host, Mike Foster, and I'm here to show you how to stop wasting your benefits. Now get off your ass, step up to the firing line, and make ready for today's lesson. Shooter standby.
Hey, ADPI Nation, Kevin here. Before we start this week's show, I want to take a quick second to talk about systems. The business systems that you put in place will determine your success and your financial future. Well, I got news for you. No one teaches you these systems, not in school, and unfortunately not in the military either. That's why the ADPI team banded together to create the best and most comprehensive system that anyone out there, no matter their level, could learn from and build upon. We call it our Military Real Estate Investing Academy. Our 80 plus lesson course will take you from real estate newbie to full-fledged military real estate investor and action taker. Click the link in the show notes and use code ADAM, ATOM, at checkout for $300 off today. That's code ADAM, ATOM, for $300 off today. Now, let's start the show.
Hey, what's going on, ADPI Nation? We are blessed to have a very, very, very special guest, an Air Force guy. So, Mike, you know, no hard feelings there, but we got to form it. Yeah, there he goes. I'm Air Force. Tyler's Air Force. Mike was out on boats or something in the water. I don't know. I get seasick.
Navy. Anyway, Mighty Navy. But let's go.
But Tyler here. So we have Tyler Austin joining us on the podcast today. And Tyler's story is incredible. Going from Air Force ammo troop to then he cross-trains into cyber warfare. And he's in the Air Force for a couple years, does a contract, enlisted. Then he goes and he's going to tell the story. But we're going to dig into how he went from GS3 to GS12 to million-dollar wholesaler. Boom. And it is an incredible, incredible story. So if you are listening to this and if you have thought about getting into wholesaling or thinking, hey, I'm active duty or I'm in the military and I want to start, you know, kind of digging in, this is the episode for you. So stay tuned. But before we begin, Mike, can you, I know we haven't talked about the community lately, but what is going on with you? I know there's crazy things going on with you and what you're doing with your foundation and what is going on in the community, man.
Oh yeah, man. We've got a ton of things going on, guys. So real quick about, the community, right? I mean, we are growing Adam, man. Adam is blowing up, right? We've got a Telegram app now that we've been using. So if you haven't gotten access to Operation Adam yet, you need to go and sign up for it. And it comes with 1 year, all right, of MRIA. So you definitely want to get into that program. But get on the Telegram app because we've got folks talking about deals, talking about walking properties, talking about everything that's going on, right? Asking questions in real time, getting real time answers, right? Facebook is cool, but let's be honest, right? How many times does your post get lost in the scroll in the feed? Mm-hmm. Like, can we be real? I mean, you post something go for it.
Yeah. No, I was just skeptical about like how these chat apps would work. And when the team brought it up to me, like, hey, we should kind of do this Telegram thing. I was like, oh God, I'm another freaking notification on my phone. Are you serious? Like, I don't want to deal with this, but I will tell you that the convenience and like, I don't work for Telegram. We're not sponsored by Telegram or anything, but they have their stuff together. Like, it is very easy to use. Like, I think it's way better than WhatsApp, way better than all the other, you know, Facebook Messenger and all of that stuff. It's just like super easy and super, super capable. So I guess that's why they're the world's number one chat app.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. So we've linked up with them and we're offering some really cool stuff, but, let's dig in, Mike, to today's episode. And Tyler, I did a brief introduction, but I'd love for you to kind of fill in the gaps there, man. Welcome to the show. And thanks for being here.
Hey, I really appreciate you guys having me on. It's always fun to, like I said to the community a few days back, like being around a group or even having individuals listen that that understand why I curse so much and why I am the way that I am definitely helps. In business, it's been an interesting venture going through and having these people like, well, you shouldn't talk like that in your support chat. I'm like, well, you just get 100% me. So I do appreciate you guys having me on. Thanks so much. Well,
welcome to the show, man. It's definitely going to be epic and I cannot wait to get into your story. So you want to give us a little bit about your military background and how you got started?
Yeah. So 100% man. So I started, I enlisted when I was 17, I believe. Well, actually technically I went to the delayed entry program when I was 16 initially. My parents signed off and all that good stuff. And then at the time I was actually going Navy. I had a Navy dive contract with an avionics next.
Dodge that bullet.
I mean, with these sounds. Dude,
bro, I got sound effects, man. I love it.
Got sound effects for everything. That's right.
I'm sorry in advance, Tyler. But
it's going to get way worse, bro. It's going to get way worse.
That's funny. But yeah, it was the contract ended up having like 367 days until I left for basic or whatever. And after 365, you have to reset your, you know, delayed entry program contracts or whatever. Anyway, I got pissed off. I was like, I'm getting screwed over from the very beginning. So I went next door to the Air Force recruiter and I was going to try to go to TACP at the time. One thing after another, ended up in an ammo slot. I had a decision between fuels and ammo. And I was like, well, ammo sounds cool. You get to like slap this bar and like de-staticize your body. And it, like, they made it sound super awesome. And it is a cool career field. I love my time there. I did 6 years as ammo, another year and a half or so in the reserves as ammo out of Utah. I was an IMA there. So I flew once a year and completed my training. And in that time frame in between there, I had switched over to the government job I was telling you about, which is essentially like an internship program. You start off as I think it's called Pathways Program. It's an awesome program for anybody who is exiting because you start at a 4. So I was actually, it was a 4 and then a 5 after a certain period of time, GS. It kind of sucks depending on what your rank was, because when you get out and then drop down below being basically a airman again, it was kind of a kick in the butt a little bit to your ego and all that good stuff. But, you know, you just kind of push with the punches. And then the Pathways program essentially takes you to another program that they have for GSs where you would go like 7, 9, 11 and then outplace as a 12. Well, in the career field that I was doing, when I was in the cyberspace for the government and doing some pretty cool things, and I see my contractors making a ton of money, and I seen me doing the same exact thing, getting paid like nothing. So, you know, like anything, you know, you figure out ways to make it to where, you know, you're at the advantage if you're going to stay and do something. Kind of how can you figure out the loopholes in the system and all that good stuff? Due to leadership and everything else, you know, we kind of made something work to where I outplaced as a contractor for a little while and then Rick came right back on as a GS to kind of make my argument more strong to come in as a 12 again. So that's how I made that happen. So for anybody who is, you know, outplacing, you know, a good way to do it is the GS world will not give you a rank no matter how much you're qualified. If you're getting paid $27,000 a year, like I was as a 5.
Wow.
And And then you want to go up to a 12 position that's getting paid like roughly $80,000 a year. They're like, no, they dictate the value based off of the money, right? Not based off the job. There's just the red tape or whatever that you can't get past. So I just kind of figured out how to get around that. The unfortunate thing for the government was that on the side, you know, I'd never let anything be outside of my control. And on the side, I was building out my own thing, right? So I got started in the real estate in 2017 and started kind of looking into the wholesaling space. I seen some, you know, podcasts, you know, much like this and Bigger Pockets. And I heard about wholesaling and was like, oh, that's illegal. That's nothing that you can really do. You know, you have to be an agent to sell properties and stuff. And you know, at the same time though, my hacker side of me was like, you know, this sounds like a way to like, to kind of get into the system in an easy way. And I ended up hearing a podcast episode that had, some individuals that were local in my market here in Northwest Florida. And I was like, okay, well, if they're doing it, they're not arrested, then I should be able to do it too. So that's kind of what got me interested in actually starting the real estate side. So that timeline was between 2009 when I entered in to 2000 into active duty to 2017 when I decided to ultimately like start looking into real estate, and I left the reserve component in 2018 entirely. And like government.
Can I ask Tyler, you know, you were, I think it's safe to say, not satisfied with your government job, right? Pay wise, financially, like you weren't satisfied financially. You knew that you could do better in some way, shape or form. And then you kind of, you know, found wholesaling and gave it a go. How much time did it take you to educate yourself and make that decision? Because most people have the same kind of thought that you had, oh, well, I can't do this because of X, Y, or Z. And then you obviously educated yourself, and then you found out that actually you can do this. So I think getting over that first hump for people who might be starting in any type of real estate, whether it's wholesaling or not, is I can't do this because, and then kind of just crushing that negativity. So how did you do that?
Well, initially I didn't even want to do wholesaling. I was looking to house hack. I just wanted like to find a property that I could live in and pay my mortgage, which actually, and we can talk about it later. I found a place here in Fort Walton that has a guest house, and I put it on Airbnb a couple of days ago for the first time. I've just been solo renting it, and man, like that's a
boom.
That's insane.
Isn't it crazy?
Right? Like
isn't it crazy? 100%. You'll never rent the same way ever again in that place. No,
I'll never, because I was renting at $900, all utilities included. And I'm like, this month is $4,000 in revenue. I'm like,
it just completely opens up your mind to the possibilities,
and it books like super quick.
Yeah,
and the amount of management is not that hard. It's
right,
like not hard.
No, the cleaner manages it. But anyway, So I ended up house hacking inevitably in the end, anyway. But I wanted to do house hacking, and I was only looking at wholesaling as a way to find my own deals, right? I didn't even know that there was the whole assigning of the contract portion of it at the time. I looked at it like, okay, go around and find people. So the first step that I had done, I didn't really talk about it the other day, is I went around and I just drove around looking for duplexes, and I would knock on the doors of the duplexes and see if one of them was the owner or not the owner. I didn't know you could look them up online or anything at the time. And I was asking them like, hey, I was curious if you're interested in selling the property. All of them wanted like ridiculous prices that I knew wouldn't work for me to be able to pay my mortgage and pay off the other side of it. So I had an agent buddy, and I was like, well, hey, they are interested in selling. So I was like giving them off to him, which I later found out they were kind of like, it was like a bird dogging type thing. And then he would just take me out for dinner.
Here's your Big Mac. Thanks, right? Thanks, man.
Right.
Extra fries.
Yeah. So, short end of the stick there, but what it taught me is that, ultimately the biggest thing, like you're saying, is just really just taking action at the lowest form possible, because, what a lot of people do is they try to, look at it like, okay, I know I want to be here. Like, and that's like, you know, let's say 5 miles away. And they're thinking about how they're going to get to the fourth mile rather than running the first mile, you know? And so really it's about just taking that first step. So for me, I'm a really quick action taker in terms of like, and it's not always a good thing. Sometimes it's bit me in the butt. But what I've learned from my personality is that as I make decisions very quickly, as long as I'm really quick to make the decision, if I realize something's bad, then it's always going to kind of bounce itself off, kind of like dollar cost averaging in the stock market. Right.
Tell me about it. I just got burned by stupid AMC. Yeah. I'm a dummy. I was like, oh, I'm going to get on this train. Yeah. And then like 3 hours later, I was like, shit.
you gotta be careful, you know? So it's like, I've learned kind of how my personality is in that front, and just taking immediate action is the first thing. So I started looking into real estate in 2017. And actually I had bought a home and was doing some of that bird dogging stuff when I was stationed at Minot, but that was in like 2015, 16 timeframe. But I didn't actually start like doing any of the marketing or really digging into the education side until 2017. And so you could say that I had some delayed stuff there. I did make excuses between 2015 when I got out and 2017. You know, I got out the military. We found out we were pregnant. I got like, into a really bad emotional state, and the fact that my wife was taking care of me. And so I made a bunch of excuses in those first 2 years. And then after I realized, I had, like, I kind of mentioned it on our call a couple of days ago. Like, it was the first time I ever cried on the phone to my dad. Like, I broke down on the phone. I was like, dude, I fucked up. You know, I got out the military. I have no money. My wife's taking care of me. I was trying to go pre-med. I was going to, what is that? The state to the right of it, Wisconsin. And I was like going to do some, shadowing over there. And I was so overwhelmed because of the fact that every single month I was going more and more in debt. You know, like, there was no median. It was like, okay, like, I was able to handle it through credit cards, and I was able to pay down the credit cards, but it was continuing to increase. So much so, but by the end of that, I was roughly about $60,000 in debt going into 2017 when I was getting that government job. When I switched over to contracting, I wasn't making anything. I was like making $27,000 a year. So, like, something had to happen. So when wholesaling came about, it wasn't really a matter of like waiting to make a decision about it. It's just like, okay, you either do it and be the person that does it. Cause everybody says, that the only good day to do anything is usually yesterday, is how it works. So, they just gotta make a decision.
That's powerful. That really is, man. And you know what? I wanna highlight this real quick, because what you said just now is the same thing that so many veterans experience when they transition. Right? They go from making that stable income, and now on the back end, they have to redefine themselves. Even if they're making a stable income on a job, right? Does that job fulfill you? And if it doesn't, now you're in this position where you need to find yourself. And you know, I really appreciate you being transparent, man, because you left that job in search of finding yourself, and then found yourself falling into more and more and more debt. This is exactly what happens. And a lot of veterans, they get lost in this transition period, and they become homeless on the street. Mm-hmm. They go into drugs. Mm-hmm. They get into, you know, suicidal ideations, man. They get depressed. And they get stuck, but you got to keep moving. You have to take that action. And I love the fact that you weren't afraid to go knocking on freaking doors to go and say, hey, do you own this place? Are you looking to sell? Most people will not do that. But that right there, I think was probably the crux of like your success, that changing point to say, okay, I'm going to go out there. I'm going to freaking make some shit happen. I mean, sure, I might get some dinner from my realtor for a little bit, right? A
Big Mac, yeah. Right?
But you start putting the pieces together, and you start realizing, wait, hey, hold on now. I can do something, right? Maybe another person would have said, hey, let me get my realtor license. And now every single one of those referrals, I get a referral check, right? It doesn't matter, but you did it, though. You took that action, man, and well done. That is crazy.
There's also Mike, there's something to be said about the power of necessity. So Brendan Burchard says in High Performance Habits, it's one of, that feeling of necessity, that feeling of the highest performers, even if they don't have their backs against the wall, they have this intrinsic drive that it's almost like they always do. And that makes them perform at a much, much, much higher level than others. So there's ways, and if you haven't read that book, guys, we'll put the link in the show notes, High Performance Habits.
Great.
And also I believe Tim Kelly and Eric Upchurch are certified High Performance Habits coaches. They've been through a $10,000 or $20,000 training with Brendan because this is such a powerful tool. But anyway, it's that necessity, that feeling of moving forward, and you had your back against the wall, Tyler. And, you know, Mike, you're saying it, a lot of veterans transition out. You have that because you suddenly lose, like that, all of the benefits, quote unquote. And I'm glad, Tyler, that you went and took the step into real estate and you kind of took that risk. Cause it's very easy to just be like, well, I got to find another W-2, I just got to find a W-2 and because that's like the safe play. That's what society tells us that we have to do. And they frown upon entrepreneurship and taking risk. They frown upon all of that stuff. But the truth of the matter is, if you want real freedom in life, then you got to take some risk. And if you're in a position to take risk where your back's not up against the wall and you have 60 or you don't have 60 grand in debt, that's good for you. Take that risk now, because it's a lot scarier when your back is up against the wall.
Yeah. Yes, it is. 100%.
Oh yeah. And I think a big thing to cover on that, because I technically I did go back to find the W-2, right? Because I was going to school, my daughter was born. I tried to do a little bit of stuff online, you know, like entrepreneurship stuff, you know, drop shipping, all those typical, you know, bouncing back and forth things. And me going into that Pathways program was me really going back to the government, being like, I need stability. And more so though, what I realized, and it was the time when I started, when I broke down my phone with my dad, I think this is kind of important for people to understand, is like, the thing that was holding me back the longest wasn't the fact that I didn't have drive, because I was staying up until like 3 o'clock in the morning every night trying to figure out, how do I like make money online? How do I like be an entrepreneur? How do I do this? I was reading a ton of books. I was doing I thought that I was doing everything. And then I realized that I wasn't actually like doing anything for me. And that was the biggest thing. I went to the government and I realized I was trying to get to this GS-12 position because I was trying to be in a position of what I internalized as something that would be respectable. Like, I was looking like I need to be in that rank, because at that rank, I'm going to have the ability to make decisions. And so I worked my ass off, you know, 50% travel, like coming home and still not doing anything with my family. I missed the first 2 years of my daughter's life. To get to that rank. And then I realized that it wasn't about that. Cause even time, no matter where you get in life, there's always someone above you, you know, and they're always going to trump your decisions. If you don't like, if they don't like what you say, it's always going to get squashed. And that's not to say that you shouldn't, you know, seek out. Cause I have a lot of buddies that are still, you know, in positions in the government that, you know, is, and they love their jobs. And I loved my job. The problem was, is that internally, I was trying to do something to prove something to my dad the whole fucking time, right? Everything I was doing in entrepreneurship was because my dad was an entrepreneur, and he was successful for a period of time, you know, and still is. And so everything I was doing was like trying to do it from an external point of view so people can look in and see me as a certain kind of person. And that fucked with me. And that's what ultimately drove me to break down. And once that went away, everything about me changed. I started saying whatever the fuck I want, whenever I want. I started being the person I want to be without any sort of judgment to anybody. People that didn't like it left, and people that really jive with me stayed, and my relationships improved, and my internally everything switched. And that's what ultimately I feel like ended up allowing me to be able to look at it from through a different lens and what success was to me and where I wanted to go. And that was everything for me. When I started not trying to prove something to anybody and was 100% transparent with myself and where I wanted to be, I think that's a big problem, especially when people get out of the military, is they get stuck in this thing of everybody looking at them like, oh, well, you got out. Why would you do that? You should have done 20. You should have done this, and you should have got your retirement because of the benefits and because of this. And so you feel like you're being judged just because you're trying to go out and do what you want to do and be who you want to be. So it puts you in a bad state, when in all reality, it's just about kind of what you want to do. I don't care if it's working at McDonald's, flipping burgers, if that's what gives you happiness, but ultimately you got to seek and search out the things that do, you know,
I love
energize that, you, you know, emotionally and physically. So that's kind
of strikes deep, dude.
That's the big thing that ultimately was my turn.
I was the same way. I literally had the same breakdown. My father, entrepreneur, Mike, I don't even think you know this. Like, that's, Tyler and I are cut from the same exact cloth, because dude, like, I was proving, I held myself back because I was always trying to prove myself to other people. And finally, in the last probably year and a half, I said, screw this. What am I doing? Like,
good for you,
it
bro.
Doesn't like, but that, it, that yep. takes a long time and tough conversations, because the people that you're looking up to don't necessarily know that their actions and their words have so much sway.
Mm-hmm.
So especially family.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
You know, your family, right. You know, I'm sure my dad, if you're listening, I love you. And I know you love me too, but you had an incredible influence on the decisions I would make to try to be like you, to try to emulate you. And then I realized that I don't have to be you to be successful, and redefining that success and what success means to me, that hit me in my core, dude. This episode's getting deep. Man.
Woo! This is getting deep. Good Lord. And then Kevin goes and ruins it.
That's not deep.
All right.
That's called a transition club horn, bro.
Yeah, right. All right. That's exactly what I'm about to say. Let's get to the part where we're talking about money, man. So talk to us about your journey to $1 million in wholesaling. I really want to know, what were the habits that you started forming that you noticed were working, right? Give us some of those, like those really the big sales and marketing things that you were doing, because there's a lot of sales and marketing that comes into wholesaling, guys. It is not an easy path to get into. If you don't have a lot of time, you're not going to be able to hit $1 million like Tyler did, right? So like, let's talk about some of this stuff.
Awesome. Yeah. So it all started with me. Well, I kind of mentioned it before. I don't recommend this. It's not advised, but putting $10,000 on a card that I'm not supposed to put $10,000 of for my own purpose.
Yeah, you mentioned that in Adam. We'll skip over that part.
We'll skip over it. But I spent 10 grand and nothing really came of it. And like I already said, we were in debt. We weren't making money, you know, in growing. I'm here trying to struggle to like get to where another $5,000 on my annual salary meant something to me, which is crazy in perspective, because now I'm like another $5,000 in a day means something to me. And that's like to point in perspective of how much shit can change over the course of 3 or 4 years, right? But like when you go out and you start marketing, or you start deciding on what you want to do in life, or you just start deciding, is it wholesaling for myself? Is it wholesaling to assign contracts? What is it? The very first thing you need to do is figure out how much money you realistically have for a 6 month period of time. If that answer is $100 a month, then you sure as hell better stick to $100 a month. You don't just creep more simply because you're trying to create more inbound. What you have to do is you have to work harder. The downfall that I had when I was getting started is that I didn't have the time to be able to work harder, because I was already squeezing as much as I could in there, given the time that I did have. So I took advantage of spending more money, even though I didn't have it, to be able to create consistency. And I just simply told myself, if anybody else can do this, I can too. And I'm going to continue spending and putting myself in debt as much as I have to. In my head, I said, I'll go up to $100,000 in debt, because that's what a college degree costs. Right. And I already had one at the time, and I just looked it up and I was like, okay, that's what it costs. I don't even use it. Then that's what I'm going to do to dedicate to myself and my business. Mm-hmm. So I don't advise racking up $100,000 in debt, however. So I just spent money and I basically blew it. $10,000 in direct mail, no deals, no nothing. Came back, all that mail was inside of post office box and another little yellow and white like bin that they had on the sign. All that return mail came back and I didn't generate any leads. So it was really demoralizing. It sucked. I ended up kicking a lead up from that campaign 3 months later, however, and did do a deal off of it. And I made
from
15
one deal.
Grand from it. 10 from off
deal.
The bat, and
that's
then five
the power
like,
of wholesaling,
six months later. From one deal.
15 yep. grand. Yeah.
From one deal. Right. Yeah. And that compensated me at least from that. But in between that 3 months is where a lot of the kind of magic, I guess, started to happen. When I realized kind of what data was, and I started taking it from what my powers were, which at the time was analyzing data, being in the hacking kind of realm, working on planes and stuff like that. You're really looking at streams of data all day. I was like, okay, well, this is no different than that. You know, I want to look at the stream of data. This is data that I'm marketing to. These are people. And I just need to get a yes or a no from them. I just need to know, do they want to sell their house or don't they?
How do you become a successful military real estate investor? It starts with having a strong squad and trustworthy mortgage broker by your side. Hey guys, Kevin here. I wanted to take a quick break from the show to help you fill out your real estate investment dream team. Whether you're looking to fund your first VA house hack, close on an out-of-state turnkey investment, or just have a conversation with a lender who speaks your language, make sure you reach out to ADPI's team of qualified mortgage pros. With a full range of tailored lending options, our team is standing by to provide active duty service members, veterans, and military families just like you all the advice and resources you need to close on your first or next investment opportunity. Click the link in this episode's show notes or simply text DEAL, D-E-A-L, to 33777 to get connected today. Now, let's get back to the show.
So I looked at the data. I looked at why I got all that return mail back, and I realized data doesn't come equal. It comes all messy. It comes kind of jacked up. And you should really take care of that first, no matter what you're marketing to. It could be commercial property, single family residences, land, it doesn't matter. Get that cleaned up first. And then from there, now we can spend our money smart, right? We can spend it on the clean stuff. So that's what I ended up doing. And once I realized the whole and learned about like using your phone to reach out to homeowners instead of just sending direct mail, I was like, okay, well, this is pretty obvious. You know, if I think about how I do an engagement against something, I always take the path of least resistance first, right? We look at the low hanging fruit to get into like a machine that, you know, has like an old operating system, for example. And then once we're in there, we start tackling the more difficult things once we have escalated privileges or whatever, right? So what I realized is like, well, I'll just do the same exact thing in my real estate company. I'll do the cheapest marketing strategy first, and I'll work my way towards the more expensive marketing strategies as I don't reach those individuals. Okay. So I took the data that I had, which I went to my accounting and got a tax delinquent list, which is people who haven't paid taxes. I made sure that they're going to be going to auction within the next year. And then I took high equity data because I wanted to be able to make sure that if I were to get a lead, it was a lead that I could be able to buy, you know, and sell and make a profit. Because if it doesn't have equity, then there's, you know, I have to know more information, right? Which you can do as mm-hmm. you continue to grow and increase your, what I call viability. So then I started marketing to those. We skip traced this clean data. We received phone numbers back, and we received some that didn't have phone numbers. Anything that we didn't have phone numbers, I knew I couldn't reach their phone. So that's what I spent my direct mail, my higher cost marketing on. And then any of that stuff that we didn't get phone numbers back from, in addition to the direct mail, we would also go through and see if we can't, if it was like vacant, we would try and reach out to their family members and get phone numbers and stuff like that. So we just had a systematic approach to what we were doing, right? So if someone's just getting started, they could start off with like a really little bit of data. For us, it was like 2,500 total records between the tax delinquent and high equity that were on both those lists. And we just started doing this sequence through it. Pull the data down, take the clean of it, skip trace it. Any of the stuff that wasn't clean, we cleaned it up and then we skip traced it. Anybody who we didn't get phone numbers back from, we direct mailed. Anybody who we did, we called one by one, single line dialer, and we left voicemails, organic voicemails for everybody. And we did that for that whole quarter, and that kicked out our first 250 grand. And I was like, okay, like this is a possibility. Like we can do something. We're getting traction. You know, I think of course in that quarter it was 250 grand and 12 deals. So it wasn't a high.
So you made 250 grand in 12 deals.
Yes, 250 grand in 12 deals in revenue.
In revenue. And what was your market, and what was your overhead to
So at the time I was paying a VA $600 a month. She was my admin VA and she did cold calling for me, okay? And then I had an acquisitions person that I had hired because I was traveling throughout this whole time, right? So I had to figure out a way to be able to have the business running while I wasn't there. So I hired somebody, paid them 20% commission to do my acquisitions. She would also be the one doing the single line dialers to the really niche records. And then she also dispositioned the deal. So she got 20% flat to do acquisitions and dispositions and basically prospect, right?
Wow.
She was making like $10 or $12 an hour at a property management company at the front desk. So it was like, in the end, she took home like maybe 17 a year. And in that quarter, she did like 52 grand in commissions. Boom. So I was like,
wow. In a quarter.
Yeah, in a quarter. And so it was,
she wasn't going anywhere. Yeah,
sadly, her husband got orders to Hawaii and she ended up deciding to leave. Yeah.
Oh.
But it was great, you know. In some of my older YouTube videos, her name was Julia. She's in there. And you know, she did a great job. She was really personable. She got along with people. But at any rate, I was paying commission there. So I had nothing on the front end and I was paying $600 a month for this VA to do admin stuff and everything else. And then later on, I ended up also hiring an actual cold caller to hit all the high equity that Julia wasn't hitting, through the, really niche stuff. So that might've been another $600. So let's just say my total overhead, it might have been 15 grand in that whole quarter.
Right.
Yeah. So my net was really high. I mean, even now we maintain at minimum a 60% like net profit margin. If we get below that, we're really concerned on the real estate side. Typically though, we want to be above a 75%, but 60%, if you start kicking in direct mail, it starts kind of going up as far as your net profits dwindle a little bit, but yeah.
The thing I love about this is that you were so quickly able to get out of your own way. And as entrepreneurs, that's a really, really difficult skill to have, because we want to be, and if you're listening to this and you're a landlord, you're an entrepreneur. If you don't know you're an entrepreneur, you are an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. So the sooner you can learn this and get out of your own way and build the systems, whether that's getting a VA. I mean, I love how and using the creative 20% commission. So instead of paying someone a salary, you're paying them based on the output. And that might be a tough sell in the beginning, especially if you don't have any track record or proof. But if you can tell them like, hey, this is going to work. Here's how I know this is going to work. All you need to do is make these calls. And it sounds like while you were traveling, this person was doing your cold calling to your best client. She was handling the acquisitions and the disposition. She was a wholesaler. She was pretty much doing all of the work. I mean,
right? More or less, right? I had the system.
Except the data mining.
Right. I had the systems and she had, and I had the systems, the processes and the knowledge. And then I took that knowledge and I fed it into her, right? And then she executed on that knowledge to achieve the end result, right? Your only job really as a CEO or like creator of a company is to learn information, make it into a process, and then make it regurgitatable easily in actionable steps towards somebody else that doesn't want to be the person with all the responsibility. You know, they just want to be kind of doing their thing. Mm-hmm. So that's what I had done. And we pretty much follow that same exact model to this day. I mean, it's become a lot simpler and a lot more refined because of, the stuff that we've built out over time. But getting out of your own way is a really important, thing to achieve, but you just got to make sure what I notice a lot, in our community is that a lot of people, they don't try to get out their own way from the beginning. They try to hide from themselves, I guess is a better way to put it, because what they do is instead of doing the work, they automatically hire somebody to learn it and do it for them rather than doing the work, learning it, and then offloading it. Because they're trying to say, well, I'm just, it's a $10 an hour task. I'm like, well, have you made any money in the business yet? No. Well, then you're worth $0. So therefore you need to learn it first and put the work in. It's not always the same because there's some things, once you get to a certain level, you can hire somebody and not know, how to do the job. Like, I don't know how to do a lot of the stuff that my team does at REI Stiff, but, we're at the point now where you have to hire that kind of skill set. They've spent a lot more time learning it. You wouldn't be able to do that for every single role as you scale. But in a wholesaling company or a real estate company that's starting off, you got to put the work in.
Exactly.
This could be said for partnerships too, Tyler. It's not just in wholesaling. Say you want to take down a deal, maybe a larger deal, maybe a short-term rental, like whatever you want to get into. You bring a partner on board who maybe is interested in putting up the risk capital for you. And then you're the expert. Like, just do what Tyler said, become the expert, be knowledgeable, put that sweat equity into your own education and find a partner who maybe has something you don't like. More money or more time or something, and building that partnership out. You don't always have to hire people to get things done.
Yep.
You can partner with people who have different skill sets or different assets or something that they're willing to contribute. And that is really, really special. That is a great way to scale. So that's great advice, Tyler.
Yeah, 100%.
Hey, man, well said. So throughout this process, what would you say is like the biggest challenge that you faced and how have you overcome that?
The biggest challenge, I guess, that I faced was, in my journey in general, between having like my Florida Cash Real Estate, the real estate stuff and, REI Stiff and building multiple companies at one time was the fact of making the decision on where your energy should be spent. Because even though while maintaining like a small team, and closing deals and doing everything on that side, like when you start as the person who's kind of like still kind of the glue, when you don't have like a COO or something like that to kind of be the glue, you can very quickly find yourself where you're giving too much energy in another location. And if you're not really visual and you're not, you know, coherent about it, you can, without even knowing it, your other company can be like going down the drain, right? So there was times when I realized it's been like 2 months and I haven't even put a bead on my team over here because I've been so focused on the growth over here. So that's something I think that is really important is for those that are in the military right now and also doing, you know, trying to build a company, you know, you're going to have a lot of energy, you know, being put over here in the military side. You might be deploying, you might be doing all that kind of stuff. And you're trying to grow this company. It's going to be difficult to kind of make sure that your energy is being still put into your team, because they can, like, even a virtual assistant in the Philippines, this is probably one of the biggest mistakes I made really early on, is you hire them and then, you end up not in, like, bringing them into the company as if they are someone who's physically there, right? You don't have that. They don't include them on certain meetings. You just think that they're like just someone who just does a bunch of cold calling for you and just generates leads. And they can get, you know, they're alone over there, right? They're alone. They're not part of the company. They're not coming in the office, not doing any of that stuff. So you start seeing a diminishing return from them because they're kind of like slowly losing focus because they're not really truly part and like baked into the mission
that
you have. So, and that can be with any remote employee. That's probably my biggest struggle. How I overcame it was simply hiring individuals in place to be there when I can't be is essentially the answer to that. But outside of that, money management would be the next thing, which is a big one. I made that 250 in that quarter, I was like, cool, it's at the end of the quarter. I was like, that was last quarter of the year. So it's like, okay, I realized I was gonna have to pay taxes. So my solution to that was literally just blowing like 150 grand or whatever it was, you know.
Woo, on, let's go.
Yeah, on stuff that I knew I could depreciate. So I bought a crap ton of cameras. I bought like a new vehicle. I was being stupid, you know, on the things that I knew I shouldn't be doing. I mean, I did pay off all of our debt at the same time that we did have, but, you know, I think money management is the next biggest thing. If you can like fix your acquisitions aspect of things, and you can also fix your money, and you can have both of those taken care of in both your personal life and your business, like your level of stress goes down and your ability to scale drastically increases. So
I think there's something to be said here on the money management piece, because I think that speaks to who you hang around with.
Yes.
If you are hanging around with people who are managing their finances well, who are making a lot of money, whether they're entrepreneurs or whatever, doesn't matter. If the people in your circle are going to, in one way, shape, or form, influence your financial decisions. If you're hanging around with people who are popping bottles at the club, you're going to be popping bottles at the club. If you're hanging around with people who are investing, you know, their capital wisely in a well-diversified portfolio, guess what? You're going to see that and you're going to say, hey, that seems smart. How do I get into that, Joe or Bob or whatever, or Sally? Like, you talk with these people, but your circle and your network, we always say, Mike and I always say this, I'm sure Tyler, you say it to your community, your network is your net worth.
Yes.
Hang around with absolutely. People you respect, hang around with people who are doing what you want to do, and strive to be the dumbest guy or girl in the room, because you will grow incredibly faster. And whether you know it or not, you'll be avoiding a lot of the pitfalls that, you know, I bet, Tyler, if you can go back in time to that first quarter, the end of the year, you probably would have invested in some syndications, or you would have done something differently that you didn't know. But it's like, we don't know what we don't know. And if you live your life in this silo, then I don't want to say you're doomed to fail, but you're doomed to not grow. That's a fact.
That's very true. Very, very true.
Yeah. I think, like, not understanding how money flows. Like, I got moving into next quarter, after that, I only had like 30 grand left or something like that. Like, I realized, like, I made, like, between my work and everything else, you know, we made, you know, at roughly, let's say 300,000, you know, 350 if you include my wife's pay into the household. And like, I don't have any money, I don't have any money to show for it. Like, at all. Like, I had like 30 grand, which is what ended up ultimately funding REI Sif's account to start that company. But I was broke. I made money, but I was still broke. And that bothered the hell out of me. And so that next year, I wanted to understand more about how money actually works. Like, what is money? I understood, you know, obviously the physical currency aspect of things, but I wanted to understand more about what the power of it is. Because everybody used to always say like, it takes money to make money. And I always used to like look at that as like a really core thing that I did. I was like, okay, I need more money because I need to make more money. And it's not necessarily wrong, but it's not 100% true either, because really it takes work to make money. And that doesn't have to be like spending money to make money. It just means that you put in time. So it takes time to make money, but it takes money to build wealth. And so when I realized the compound effect of money and what net profits were is when a lot of things changed for me. So every single month, you know, I looked at it like, okay, how much money can I spend to bring in this much money in my household? How can I continue to pull net profits back? And when I started focusing on that, I realized that my bank accounts were growing. My business was still doing the same exact revenue, and all the tax money was there. And my only job the whole year was to figure out by the end of the year, how do I make it to where that tax account ends up being my money instead of the government's money? Like, how can I reinvest my income to make sure that that, you know, 100 grand sitting in a tax account can be just distributed back to me instead of being written as a check? So that was a powerful transition there. And I only really, I definitely haven't mastered it yet because I still have a pretty hefty tax bill. But, you know, it's a process that continues to work and it can only continue to get better over time. But there's no point in growing a company. There's no point in doing any of this if, like, you're not building actual wealth for your family. Like, in the
end. Sure.
That was the biggest struggle that I had. That's probably the biggest one.
No, that's great, man. Thank you for that transparency, because it's so true, right? And to your point, there's no point in growing a business if you're not growing yourself along with it, right? It's not going to happen, because your business can't get to here if the person running it is operating from down here. That doesn't work. You have to continue to be lifting up your business. So well done, man. Well done.
100%.
Well, we are definitely running out of time.
I know. Dude, we're going to have you. I was just going to say that. I was like, man, we need to have you on, like, you know, repeat. Right. So, because we didn't even get into REI Sift. We didn't even get into all the other cool data stuff that you're doing. And we'll touch on it at the end. We'll be sure to let you plug that. But like, there's so much more to your story.
This is going to be a part two, guys.
We're going to do a part two at some point.
For sure.
I can go on rants. So,
Hey man, what are you doing at the end of the month, bro? We got another spot here on the 26th. Let's bring you back.
Yeah, I'll come on.
All right. So yeah, we are going into our bonus round. So Mike, let's kick off the four questions that we ask every single one of our guests.
Let's do it. Number one, what's your favorite book?
The 7 Strategies of Wealth and Happiness by Jim Rohn is my number one favorite book. Okay. Yeah. But second to that, is always making sure that I tell people to read Profit First and Predictable Revenue.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Nice.
Yeah. No, we're going to have all those books, like we always do in the show notes. So if you're listening to this on your phone, all you got to do is scroll down to the show notes, click the link, and you will be able to get those books. If you've been listening to the podcast for a while, you should have like a library of like 1,000 books.
Yeah. Pretty
much. You honestly, like, cause these are our top guests and they're listing off what they love the most. So please take advantage of that. Question number two. Oh, sorry, Tyler, go on.
I was going to say, cause we touched on these topics of like understanding yourself before you can really do too much and it really being a hindrance on you. Another really good book, it's only like 3.5 hours long on audio, is The Mastery of Self.
Okay. I have heard only one other person mention that book. You're the second person to tell me this. I love it. I'm gonna look it up again.
It's great.
Yeah, we're writing this down right now. Okay, question number two, Tyler, who is your biggest hero and why?
Oh man. I don't really have, a hero per se. You know, I've started saying that really, so I have a son coming June 30th and, what I've told myself, and I don't know why I didn't feel this way with my daughter. She's turning 6 this year, but like, When I found out I was having a son, I realized that, you know, I started looking from a lens of who I'm going to be to him in 15 years from now. So I'm going to say that my hero is me in 15 years through my son's eyes.
Wow. That's amazing.
Well done. Well said. All right.
Deep as usual. Tyler Austin.
That's it, digging deep. Mastery of self. That's great.
Yeah, dude. I love it.
Yep.
All right. What do you like to do for fun, man?
You know, hanging out with the family, I guess. I play a lot of video games, or I did. I haven't played it in the last couple of weeks. I've been so busy. But now I guess it's more so just involving myself with as many people as I can and having in-depth conversations is probably my pastime. You know, if I'm bored, instead of playing video games now, I'm usually smoking a cigar, drinking whiskey and having a good conversation. Nice. So trying to live like I'm 80.
Love it.
I know so many guys in their late 20s, early 30s who they'll tell me, they're like, yeah, I'm an old soul, man. They have, you know, multi-million dollar businesses, and they're like, yeah, I'm just an old soul. I'm just an 80-year-old, you know.
Yeah.
Sipping on fine whiskey and having a cigar at you know, the sun hasn't gone down, eating dinner at 4:30. Just let's lean into it.
Yeah, exactly. I love fishing and hunting too. So if I'm not doing whiskey, cigars, or playing video games, I'm doing that.
There you
that.
Go.
Love
there
it.
You go. All right. Here's our big one. You ready for this one, Tyler? What are three nuggets? So there's someone listening to this podcast right now who's in the military and they're super inspired by your story. And maybe they want to, you know, try wholesaling out. What are three nuggets of wisdom that you could give them right now?
Take action. Don't spend money to make money. And remember that you're not trying to build a seven-figure company. What you're trying to do is put seven figures in your bank account.
Mm. Oh, that's good.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Well, all right.
The concept that cannot be understated, guys, if you're listening to this right now, it's not how much you make. It's how much you keep.
Boom.
That is the key to success, because you see these people, whether they're real estate agents, whether they're wholesalers, whether they're whatever, and they're, you know, they're driving the Maseratis, and now I'm going to start making fun of Tim, driving the Mazes. And now Tim sold his Maserati. He sold it. I think he got, you know, whatever. Tim, if you're listening, I'll hear about this later.
Yes, you will.
but the point is though, you know, You, living that flashy lifestyle, it's like people think that they're like, oh, well, I have to fake it until I make it and I have to do it. No, you don't. You just need to build a strategy, surround yourself with people who are in a place where you want to be, who understand this stuff, and just be a sponge. Ask them questions, be humble, take a slice of humble pie. And as you build your company, you start actually creating wealth that lasts more than one tax year. So that is incredible advice, man. And honestly, dude, I'm glad that I was able to get you back after coming on Tuesday. And for those who don't know, Tyler was on Tuesday in our private mastermind, Operation Adam, Action Takers Only Mastermind, doing explaining this directly over Zoom to our students. And our students were able to ask him as many questions as they wanted. And they peppered you, man. But learned a lot, as always, Tyler. Thank you so much, man. This was truly a gift.
This was incredible.
I appreciate it. I appreciate you guys having me on. I apologize. We really, really didn't get into the meat and potatoes of actually the business itself. But I think for me, it's not really even the business itself and all the nitty gritty. It's everything that we covered today is really what makes a difference between being successful.
Don't worry, brother. There'll be part two.
We got part two. We got part two coming. Hey.
That's it.
All right. I'll bring a checklist of what I need to cover next time.
All good.
We got off topic. We're going to stay out of the deep. We're going to stay in the shallow end of the pool. We're going to talk about, you know, we're going to talk about the business. So stay tuned, everyone, for part two with Tyler Austin. Thanks, man. And we'll see you next time. Yeah.
All right.
Appreciate it. Thanks, y'all.
Outstanding. That was an awesome episode. Thanks so much to our special guest, and thanks to you for listening. If you haven't hit the subscribe button yet, make sure you go and do that. Or schedule a call with us by texting ADPI to 444-999 or checking out our website at www.activedutypassiveincome.com to find out how you can get started on your financial freedom journey today. I'll see you guys next week.